your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that Iranian state television is reporting 56 deaths. Tragic deaths, more than 200 injured. Iranian victims. Victims of the United States of America? Absolutely not. Victims of their own fanaticism and insanity at the funeral for Qasem Soleimani. Yeah, really. I mean, this is part of the hysteria that we're dealing with. Now, this is not to say I'm not one of those people who will tell you that, oh, the Iranians, the entire thing is phony. People aren't actually mourning this guy. They're not hysterical. I think they are hysterical. I think there is massive mourning. Is it ginned up by the government? Of course it is. What does it mean? Where do we go? We'll be talking about that with a variety of sources. Also, the political impact of all of this on the United States. The President of the United States just spoke in the Oval Office moments ago. We will get to that, to statements by Secretary Pompeo this morning. He is being attacked for being an evangelical Christian. And in fact, there's a column by Michelle Goldberg that says that that Pompeo is driven by his belief in the rapture to want to bring on Armageddon. I believe that's a slander against somebody who was actually a very, very capable member of Congress, a military officer, graduated first in his class at West Point, for goodness sake, and has been a great improvement as Secretary of State over Rex Tillerson. And wouldn't most Americans agree with that? President Trump was speaking minutes ago in the Oval Office. And on a day when Maxine Waters is now demanding that they broaden the impeachment basis, it's kind of late for that, especially with Mitch McConnell saying earlier today they're probably going to move ahead with the impeachment trial, regardless of what Nancy Pelosi does with actually carrying over to the Senate side of the building the actual grounds for impeachment, the articles of impeachment. With all of that going on, Maxine Waters says we have to review President Trump's mental health. Now, we're not talking about his mental acuity here. We're talking about his mental health, how crazy he is. Of course, Maxine Waters, who is an expert on psychiatric dislocation, Maxine Waters thinks he is dangerously crazy. We will get to that. But President Trump sounded measured and fairly serious, even thoughtful a little bit, in his remarks in the Oval Office this morning, moments ago. Here's the president.
They weren't there to discuss a vacation. They weren't there to go to a nice resort someplace in Baghdad. They were there to discuss bad business. And we saved a lot of lives by terminating his life. A lot of lives are saved. They were planning something, and you're going to be hearing about it, or at least various people in Congress are going to be hearing about it tomorrow. He's also very much roadside bombs and all of the horrible explosives that you see. He was a big believer and sent them everywhere. He was somebody that we did ourselves, that we did a lot of countries a big favor. And I've been hearing from countries, they were extremely happy with what we did. And if you look inside Iran itself, there were plenty of those leaders that were happy because they feared him and didn't like him in many cases.
I'm not so sure. Really? You think that there were a lot of, in some of the footage you see, a lot of Iranians who were celebrating? Well, of course they wouldn't be celebrating. They would be killed. But I don't think we have to believe that there are lots of Iranians who are actually celebrating Soleimani's death. It's one of those things that happens. He had political opponents in Iran, but what happens is you put up the flag, and this is a very proudly nationalistic people. And I think that one of the things that is a negative, if one can be honest enough to acknowledge it, of the killing of Soleimani, which I think on balance is very positive and helps the United States and helps the cause of world peace. But what it does do is it basically helps the Iranian regime, corrupt and evil as it is, patch together a spurt of national energy and nationalism, rallying behind the idea of this guy as a martyr. And yes, he was a martyr. To Iranian eyes, which simply shows you something about the nature of their belief, because he was, as the president said, also a monster. Listen.
Well, don't forget, in our case, it was retaliation because they were there first. They killed, and look, I don't have to talk about him for 18 to 20 years. He was a monster. But just in the very short period of time, two people dead, people badly injured. And then before that, there were other attacks. And look at what he was planning. So that'll be discussed tomorrow morning. Right now, it's classified. And that'll be discussed tomorrow with Mike Pompeo and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. We're prepared. We're totally prepared. And likewise, we're prepared to attack if we have to, as retribution.
Mr. President, if Iran's leader said that any response to the Soleimani killing would be, quote, proportional, what would the United States do in the event of any Iranian response?
So, again, John, if you look at what's going on, ours was an attack based on what they did. We weren't the first one out. He killed an American. Now two people are dead from the same attack, and some people very badly wounded. And that was one of his smaller endeavors. You look over his past. His past, he's been called a monster, and he was a monster. And he's no longer a monster. He's dead.
President Trump also, in that interchange with the press, sitting there in the Oval Office, Mike Pompeo is right beside him. President Trump made it clear that he was not sticking by the plan to attack cultural institutions or cultural landmarks. He had sent out a tweet, which I don't think anyone has defended. I mean, I honestly think it's kind of tough to defend, saying that the United States had 52 targets, some of them including Iranian cultural sites of great meaning to the Iranian people, and that the United States would strike at those. And the 52 was because they had taken 52 hostages some 40 years ago when they took the American embassy. President Trump was asked whether he was holding to that, and he says no, he's been informed that that's against the law, and he likes to follow the law, which is good. It's the right thing to say, and it's appropriate. Mike Pompeo earlier this morning did a press conference where he anticipated some of what the president had just had to say. Mike Pompeo talked about, well, the importance of Persian culture and the real threat to its integrity. Listen.
A question about the issue of cultural sites, because the president said on Air Force One coming back after you had been on the Sunday talk shows that they're allowed to kill our people, they're allowed to torture and maim our people, they're allowed to use roadside bombs and blow up our people, and we're not allowed to touch their cultural sites. It doesn't work that way. Defense Secretary Esper has made it clear that he would not follow an order to hit a cultural site, which would be a war crime. I'm wondering whether you would also push back in your advice or in your role.
You're not really wondering, Andrea.
I was
unambiguous on Sunday. It is completely consistent with what the president has said.
We will take
every action we take will be consistent with the international rule of law, and the American people can rest assured that that's the case. Let me tell you who's done damage to the Persian culture. It's not the United States of America. It's the Ayatollah. If you want to look at who has denied religious freedom, if you want to know who has denied the Persian culture is rich and steeped in history and intellect, and they've denied the capacity for that culture to continue. If you go back and look at the holidays around Cyrus and Nowruz, they've not permitted people to celebrate. They've not allowed people that they've killed, that Qasem Soleimani killed, They've not allowed them to go mourn their family members. The real risk to Persian culture does not come from the United States of America.
Sir,
that there is no mistake about that. Thank you all. Everybody have a good day.
Again, I think it'll be easier when Secretary Pompeo gets those questions later to simply say, look, I follow the president. We are going to obey international law, which means that, no, they will not be bombing or attacking Persian cultural sites. What people are talking about here is, for instance, one of the sites is Persepolis, which is an ancient ruined city. It was built around 518 BC. So we're talking 2,500 years ago, and it's considered one of the world's most significant and best preserved ancient civic sites. And no, the United States is not going to be bombing that. This is what the Taliban do. They hit those Bamiyan Buddhas. This is what ISIS did, which throughout Iraq and Syria, destroying cultural and archaeological resources. No, the United States isn't going to do that and shouldn't. Then they, of course, were also pressing Secretary Pompeo about the question of the imminent nature of the terrorist threat, to which the United States responded by taking General Soleimani out of the picture. Here's Secretary Pompeo.
Anytime a president makes a decision of this magnitude, there are multiple pieces of information that come before us. We presented that to him in all its broad detail. We gave him all the best information that came not only from the intelligence community, but for those of us who have teams in the field. We evaluated the relevant risks and the opportunity that we thought might present itself at some point. And we could see clearly that not only had Soleimani done all of the things that we have recounted, right? Hundreds of thousands, a massacre in Syria, enormous destruction of countries like Lebanon and Iraq, where they've denied them sovereignty, and the Iranians have really denied people in those two countries what it is they want, right? Sovereignty, independence, and freedom. This is all Soleimani's handiwork. And then we'd watch as he was continuing the terror campaign in the region. We know what happened at the end of last year in December, ultimately leading to the death of an American. So if you're looking for imminence, you need to look no further than the days that led up to the strike that was taken against Soleimani. And then you, in addition to that, have what we could clearly see were continuing efforts on behalf of this terrorist to build out a network of campaign activities that were going to lead potentially to the death of many more Americans. It was the right decision. We got it right. The Department of Defense did excellent work, and the president had an entirely legal, appropriate, and a basis, as well as a decision that fit perfectly within our strategy and how to counter the threat of malign activity from Iran more broadly.
I think that Secretary Pompeo expressed the defense of the president's decision about as well as you can with that extended statement. Look, the point over here is really what you do next. And there's a lot of talk about that. There's even talk on the campaign trail, of course, by Democrats. And one of the pieces of collateral damage, I believe, that has been done to by this particular strike, and it's collateral damage that I'm actually glad to see, is damage to the fringe of the Democratic Party, which is attempting to become the mainstream. I'm talking about people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who not only are questioning the president's decision-making here in this specific case, but questioning the entire necessity of standing up against Islamo-Nazi terror. And that should not be something that is seriously open to debate. This continues to be an evil and murderous force in the world. And they asked the defense secretary, Mark Esper, who is increasingly impressive, it seems to me, in his new job. And they asked Secretary Esper, with CNN's Christiane Amanpour, about the prospect of a larger war with Iran. Listen.
Partners and allies, and directly to the Iranian regime, I'd like to say we are not looking to start a war with Iran, but we are prepared to finish one. As I've told my many colleagues, as I spoke to them over the last few days, what we'd like to see is this situation de-escalated and for Tehran to sit down with us and begin a discussion about a better way ahead. We think that's the best approach at this point in time. Now, Christian, with regard to your question about the intelligence, I can assure you that it's more than razor thin, and it is persuasive. The fact of the matter is, Soleimani was caught red-handed on the ground in Baghdad. One terrorist leader of a terrorist organization meeting with another terrorist leader to synchronize and plan additional attacks on American forces, diplomats, or facilities. I think we took the right action to remove these players from the battlefield.
So, ticking time bomb, imminent threat, is that what you're saying?
I think the threat was being orchestrated by Soleimani. That's what the intelligence reported. That's what he was doing on the ground in both Baghdad, in Damascus, and elsewhere. And I think it was only a matter of days, certainly no more than weeks.
So that's days, weeks, rather than the immediate.
Okay, this is one of those points that Professor Dershowitz made on our show yesterday, that this obsession that the media seem to have with the word imminent, was it an imminent threat, that has nothing to do with international law, especially when you're dealing with somebody who is representing an ongoing terrorist activity. I know there have been some attempts by people in the media to compare this to the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in Sarajevo in 1914, in the summer of 1914, which started World War I. And we blundered into this terrible war that killed nearly 20 million people. Some people say it was only 16 million people. It was a horrible war. The so-called war to end all wars. It didn't. It ended a lot of lives. But the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand was the assassination of a civilian leader, which is very different from assassinating the general of a terrorist army. And that was what Soleimani was. He was someone who was engaged in military operations on an ongoing basis, and really military operations throughout the Middle East, including in Yemen, which has claimed literally tens of thousands of lives, in Syria, where more than 500,000 people have been basically liquidated by the Assad regime and their supporters from Hezbollah, which is an extension of Soleimani's activities. And the idea that he should be mourned as some kind of hero. I understand that for Iranian fanatics, and let us please understand that this has been a fanatical regime ever since 1979 when the mullahs took over, there is a different set of values than the set of values that you might have here in the United States. The report in National Review, which is based on reports from state television in Iran, a stampede at the funeral of slain Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force commander Qasem Soleimani has left at least 50 people dead and over 200 injured, according to Iranian state television. They're proud of that, actually. Soleimani, killed in a U.S. airstrike Thursday at Baghdad International Airport, was to be buried in his hometown of Kerman. The burial was postponed after throngs of people who turned out for the funeral made it impossible for vehicles to reach the cemetery. The crowds apparently overwhelmed authorities organizing the funeral. The death toll of this incident is over 50, they now say 56, said Abbas Amian, the director general of the Coroner Bureau in Kerman. Amian said 213 people were hospitalized after the stampede. No one's saying this isn't sincere, but it is sincerely mad and dangerous. There are also dangerous aspects to the political response here in the United States. We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show, 1-800-955-1776.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show again, welcome to our new listeners in Portland, Oregon, listening on AM 1640, The Patriot. great news station in the Portland area and an important news station. We're on live right now from noon to 3 p.m. Every weekday. And you can call us at 1-800-955-1776. The death of Soleimani. I'd mentioned before the idea that people are trying to analogize this with the killing of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, who was the heir to the throne with an elderly Austrian emperor on the throne. And it was terrible killing, and it was one of those things that shouldn't have happened. And Princip had missed his shot, and then he had a drink, and then he came around out of the bar, and then there was the carriage again, and he took a shot of opportunity, and it changed the world, and it was a disaster. But the point is, it was a crime. It was not in the middle of a war. This was a Serbian nationalist. What was called, his group was called Young Bosnia at the time, but it had nothing to do with a decision at a very high governmental level, the President of the United States, making a decision on behalf of national security to take out a general who is actively engaged in deadly, repeat, deadly warfare against your country and against our troops in the field. It is profoundly different. And by the way, in terms of all the respect for international law, that I'm very glad to see the president now saying that we will not become some kind of international war criminal by attacking cultural sites in Iran. But somebody just said, I say the last word first, we will take revenge. If they make another move, we will set fire to the place they love. Now, that's not a comment by an American. That's the IRGC commander, one of two successors to General Soleimani. This is Major General Hossein Salami. I'm sorry, that's his name. And I know that it's easy to make fun of it. The other person representing him, he's the head of the IRGC, the Iran Revolutionary Guard Corps, the head of the Al-Quds Force, the Jerusalem Force, that is the other title that Soleimani has been identified as Ismail Ghani. The story says a new Iranian general has stepped out of the shadows to lead the country's expeditionary Quds Force, becoming responsible for Tehran's proxies across the Middle East as the old Islamic Republic threatens the U.S. with harsh revenge for killing its previous head, Qasem Soleimani. The Quds Force is part of the 125,000-strong Revolutionary Guard. That's a paramilitary organization that answers only not to the President Rouhani of Iran, but only to the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The madness of funeral hysteria leading to people dying at a funeral, it's impossible not to recall the terrible riots, really, that took place at the funeral of Joseph Stalin, and people were overcome with grief. Stalin was one of the most evil human beings who ever lived. He killed a minimum of 20 million people. He made Hitler look like a piker. He's probably second place only to Mao Zedong himself in terms of the number of human beings that he exterminated. And yet people, I was just reading today some details about Stalin's funeral and the hysteria surrounding it. They interviewed a weeping, and this, of course, is the Soviet press. It's Izvestia Pravda. But they found, it's on camera, they found a weeping, inconsolable individual who says, the most important thing to me in my life is my daughter, but I would gladly give up her life if we could bring the great leader back to life. Okay, this is after Stalin died. Here's a description of what happened at the last stage of his funeral. The viewing line that stretched through the center of Moscow was clearly marked and guarded by the police and army, which used vehicles to maintain order as they hoped. Then on March 6, 1953, people came in large crowds to Tribnaya Square from the narrow Rozhdestvensky Boulevard and found the square partly blocked with cordons of trucks and troops on horseback. There wasn't enough room for people to pass, yet they couldn't go back as the others were still coming. Yelena Zak said the crowd got more tightly packed and you couldn't move. You just had to go with it, unable to escape the flow. She was one of thousands of people caught in the crowd. She was lucky enough when she was passing by the guarded fence, one of the soldiers standing up above grabbed her and took her out of the crowd, possibly saving her life. Many others were less fortunate. Quote, the whole crowd was moaning. Some people died, pressed hard against lampposts and trucks. My grandfather, who was there, told me that at some point he heard a strange chomp under his legs, and he looked down and he saw human guts. So said a TV journalist named Anton Khrekov. The next morning, many people had to look for their relatives and friends at hospitals and morgues. 66, it's all these years later, from 1953. The official number is 109 died at that funeral. Most historians say thousands. This is not a a good sign. And yet, when you listen to the respect with which Soleimani is treated by the media, I did we hear anything like this when Barack Obama killed Anwar al-Awlaki or when Barack Obama killed Osama bin Laden? Listen to this collage put together by Grabian of a media response, deeply respectful response to the passing of this evil terrorist.
He was a war hero, the commander of Iran's feared Quds force.
Qasem Soleimani was no ordinary general. The U.S. officially classified him as a terrorist, but in Iran, he was a national hero.
He's regarded as personally incredibly brave. The troops love him.
I was trying to think of somebody, and I was thinking of De Gaulle.
A revered figure in Iran and some other places in the Middle East.
Smart, charismatic, ruthless, strategic, and bold. His power made Iranians proud.
But even many of Soleimani's enemies admitted he was a military genius.
Qasem Soleimani was an evil genius.
Soleimani was in charge of spreading Iranian influence around the world, and he was extremely good at it.
He is the, think of the French Foreign Legion, you know, if you will.
By killing Qasem Soleimani, the U.S. has stripped Iran of an inspirational military leader.
The crowds are massive and emotional. There are many tears here.
Thousands of mourners on the streets in Iran, symbolic caskets aloft, weeping and chanting, I am Soleimani.
The supreme leader of Iran weeping and praying over a coffin draped in the Iraqi flag.
It's difficult to convey how revered he is.
There was talk in Iran Soleimani might be a future president or perhaps even a supreme leader.
Even a supreme leader. Wow. And they do say that his funeral may have been even bigger than the big the funeral for the original Ayatollah, the Ayatollah Khomeini. When we come back, all of this I think is indicative of the kind of totalitarian evil that we confront with Iran. And why I think the president's doing the right thing if he attempts to use this moment to try to negotiate some kind of de-escalation. But let's not get too optimistic. Meanwhile, President Trump attacked for being mentally ill. Coming up on the Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, I want to let people know that you can still get a 3 months free Medhead membership. Yeah, absolutely free. By going to our website and ordering your own signed copy of our new best-selling book, God's Hand on America, Divine Providence in the Modern Era. Maxine Waters is saying that it is not providential. In fact, it's not acceptable that Donald Trump is even president of the United States. She believes that what we need to do is open up a whole new issue as an impeachment grounds. Here is the gentle lady, if that's the right terminology, from Los Angeles on MSNBC.
That he's lied thousands of times. I think it's over 15,000 times that they've actually documented. We know that there is a matter of trust. We also know that from afar, you've had psychiatrists wondering about his mental stability. We know that the president tweaks. We know that he basically makes up his mind. He said he knows more than his generals know. So American people need to know what we're dealing with here, because it is not about which party they're going to align themselves with. It's whether or not they can trust the president of the United States, whether or not he's a liar, whether or not he's in mental health is good. It is whether
or
not
I want to set that aside for a second. I mean, the reality.
Okay, can we set that aside for a second? The question of mental health would not be, in other words, if she wants to question his mental health, that's a 25th Amendment kind of challenge, where you actually have to have the vice president and half the cabinet saying the president's no longer capable of executing his office. He's impaired somehow. That's clearly not the case. I'm sorry, it's clearly not the case. But there is no grounds for impeachment. It's very tough to associate being mentally unbalanced, as Maxine Waters alleges, with either treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. I don't think we want to criminalize questions about mental health. Let's go to Craig in Voorhees, New Jersey. Craig, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hello, Michael. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
I'm just calling because I definitely supported them taking out Soleimani. I mean, really, the guy was, threatening the United States directly and then coming into the Iraq. I don't know if he was out of his mind or just so arrogant. He just didn't think that there'd be anything that would happen to him. But, by the way,
with what you're saying about what motivated Soleimani to continue to attack the U.S. embassy, and remember, our embassy had just been attacked and part of it had been burned down, our 100-acre embassy in Baghdad, just days before he was taken out, and he apparently was planning new attacks. But I think you're right about that. What encouraged them was the idea that they thought Trump wouldn't strike. They had apparently taken the idea that Trump wants to get out of the Middle East and he will not respond. In fact, the Ayatollah had said the day before Soleimani was taken down, there's nothing America can do. And I think Trump heard that and responded. But go ahead. You had something else, Craig.
Right. But that's kind of part of the problem. I mean, Trump was sending really clear messages. I mean, we're being pulling out of Iraq and this whole situation just looks sloppy. The last couple of months look sloppy. You know, they telegraphing Iran that message, then just knocking Soleimani out, and afterwards with a belligerent talk, and then a general comes out and says, "Oh, well, we're pulling out of Iraq." I mean, what was that about?
Well, that apparently was a draft of a letter that wasn't supposed to be released. It's a screw up, and you're right. I mean, I do think that one of the things that one hopes in the next couple of days is things are going to be a little bit more tightly buttoned down with a little bit more clear line. The president said today that Soleimani was meeting with the head of Hezbollah. Now, that's not true. The head of Hezbollah, Nasrallah, is up in Lebanon. He may even be in Syria, but he was not in Iraq. Hey, I appreciate your call, Craig, and thanks for joining us, and let's have a great new year. Let's go quickly to Paul. Paul, you're on the Medved Show.
Michael, it seems to me, if you listen to the media, that the relationship with Iran and America started in 79. But the thing is, I think what never gets talked about is what happened to put in the regime that's in there, the religious type of regime. Because in 53, maybe you've spoken about this, but I haven't heard it, the CIA, along with Britain, took out an elected leader in Iran, which led to the Shah.
Right. In 54, we helped to install the Shah, who was a great friend of the United States, actually. And
yeah, but look how he treated his people. And it's the people that threw him out after 20 years of, you know, torture and just...
Okay, and all of those stories about the Shah, the Shah compared, and there are a lot of Iranians who will tell you this, the Shah was not a perfect leader, but he was a pro-Western modernizing leader. And the idea that everyone wants to bring this back to Mossadegh was the name of the elected leader who was a Marxist in 1954. And remember, this is Stalin's Russia. We were just talking about the end of Stalin and then the immediate following of Stalin. It's the old Soviet evil empire. And the United States was engaged in a very real struggle, and I think it was a struggle of good and evil, against the old Soviet Union and the old Soviet empire. And here's the point that I would make, is that you can say that taking out Mossadegh and installing the Shah was either the right thing to do, as I believe it was, or it was some kind of horrendous mistake. But you can't really explain that, let's see, that was 54, that 25 years later, 25 years later, you're blaming that decision for the Islamic Revolution. There are a lot of people who have written about this and a lot of historians who believe that the Carter administration actually blew the situation very badly by not showing any support for the Shah at a
Hello?
Time when his regime might have been saved. You now have a chance to respond.
Yes, hi. Well, the thing is, that was partly about oil because, you know, they were keeping 7/8 of the Iranian oil before Mossadegh was elected. And he said,
who was keeping it?
Britain. And
What do you mean keeping it?
They were keeping 7/8 of the oil.
Wait. What do you mean keeping it? Do you think they had big barrels and they had tanks full of oil?
It has to do
they
with
had the companies that found the oil. The oil is in the ground. Do you understand? Oil sitting in the ground does nobody any good. Iran was very, very far from having in 1954 having any technology at all that could get the oil out of the ground. The British oil companies were able to do it. They were able to actually make a profit on it. And yes, some of the money went to Iran. Most of the money went to Iran. But the idea that Britain was keeping the oil, this is like some certain politicians saying, yes, we want to keep the oil that because we liberated Iraq from Saddam Hussein. Do you think that everything in the Middle East would have been just peachy if Mossadegh had continued in power?
It would have been much better than taking him out because, see, all he was asking for was that Iran get to keep 50% of the profits of the oil that was theirs.
Okay, it's not true. He was nationalizing the oil companies. And again, why you are so fascinated by this, I know why, because people like Oliver Stone and other leftists are obsessed with this long-ago hero the same way that they tend to be obsessed with, I'm even forgetting now, the Chilean Allende, who was taken out in Chile. But we should be obsessed with the next leader. Who's it going to be for this greatest nation on God's green earth?